Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Revenue Rhythms podcast. We have myself, Daryl Alfonso, Jeff Ignacio, who is on the road to a RevOps event. It sounds like multiple RevOps events. And then we're also joined this time by the very famous Mike Rizzo, founder of MarketingOps.com. So we're happy to be graced by his presence. I don't know. It's hard for me to do a bio on Mike because he's involved in so many things. But my short intro is that he's, you know, did marketing ops for pretty much most of his career. He launched a community at marketingops.com or the MoPros. That's pretty much the largest marketing ops community in the world. And he did a wonderful conference, an inaugural conference last year called Mopsapalooza, where both Jeff and I attended. It was amazing. Anything else you want to talk about your background, Mike?
I mean, I think that's a great summarization of my background. Yeah, Mops turned community builder, turned growth hacker. I don't know. Like, I do all kinds of fun things now, it seems like. But yeah,
yep.
No. Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Thanks for joining us. We have a number of topics to go through today. But before we jump in, Jeff, why don't you tell us why you're on the road? Where are you going?
Where are you going, Jeff?
Where are you today?
I thought he stayed in the house all day and did RevOps. What is this guy doing? No. I'm on the road. I'm going to meet up and do a pavilion event at one of our partners' offices. I'm going to host this event called the RevOps for Sales Leaders. And then immediately after, I'm going to head over to the Bungalow. It's a fun little bar out in Santa Monica. And I'm going to meet up with the folks at Sales Assembly.
Nice.
I love Bungalow. Very swanky. Nice place to network and just chill and get a good drink. It's good to be out in the real world, especially for those of us that work remotely most of the time.
It must be going downhill because they're letting me in, so.
All right. So, first question. So, this is an interesting one. Came up when I was talking with one of my friends. If you are a experienced marketing technology or revenue ops professional, how do you discover new solutions, new tech, and new services? Like, how do you just stumble upon it? Do you talk to your friends? Here's another interesting way to phrase this question. If you're selling to marketing and RevOps professionals, where do you advertise? Why don't we start with Mike? Like, where do you hang out? Where do you go online and find new tech? Do you click on ads? Like, tell us your story.
Wow. Where do I hang out? I feel like that's a super obvious answer. I hang out in my community every day. So there's that. I'm mostly, if outside of the, you know, private sort of Slack environment, right? I spend most of my time perusing the feed of LinkedIn. I actually don't Facebook. I very rarely Instagram, and I almost never TikTok. I probably fall outside of the norm when it comes to the rest of the socials, you know, I would imagine. But maybe not. And yeah, do I click on ads? No, I barely even notice ads, I'll be honest with you. Ads in my feed are obvious, right? Like, it says this is an ad. Like, you know, other than that, if I was browsing the website, or websites in general, I don't know. I worked in ad tech for a while, so I feel like I'm just sort of like, if I do notice the ads, I'm looking at them because I'm like, oh, I remember what that ad type is called. But that's probably my recognition.
Same. And I don't know if you are that unique, Mike. Like, I don't remember the last time I clicked on a LinkedIn ad. I will tell you, if I have a problem at work, I talk to my friends 100%. Yeah. I just message them real quick. And in the community, I just say like, hey, you have this problem before? What did you do? Yeah. Or, hey, I'm looking to buy this. What are your suggestions? I do not trust salespeople. I love the profession. I think they're a little biased.
Rightfully so.
And
they gotta get paid.
They gotta get paid. And I will say, and I know this is self-serving, because I think all of us have some sort of newsletter format. But I will say that I subscribe and religiously read newsletters of people that I think are smart and give advice to. And yeah. If people are looking to advertise and to get in front of people that practice operations, marketing or revenue operations, I think that the marketers of those companies need to find really smart newsletters that have a devoted following. Maybe a smaller but devoted following, and that's how you get in front of them, because that's where I am.
Yeah, totally. I agree. I mean, obviously, it's shameless plug in general, right? For our environments, but we built these environments and these followers for the purposes of trying to provide value, right? Like we're doing the best we can to help them to facilitate exactly this type of question. The answer to this question is like, where do you go to discover answers to your problems? And sometimes the answer to your problem is a new feature or a piece of technology. Sometimes it is just someone sharing their experience. Yeah. But like, you go to these places for that reason, right? And so therefore those brands should partake.
There's also a context thing. So if I'm scrolling through Facebook, or I'm scrolling even through LinkedIn these days, I am not looking to learn how to get better at my job, usually. I want to know, what's Mike up to? What are my friends up to? Did anybody comment on my post? Like, that's my mode. But listen, when I'm in my newsletters, and I subscribe religiously to some, yours as well, both of you, like, I'm in there and I'm looking, like, what can I use here to be useful at my job? That's the mode that I'm in. So there's a context thing. So if I see a solution that's recommended, well, hell yeah, I'll click on it. Jeff, what do you think about this?
Yeah, so I'm going to be talking my own book here, but obviously, whatever I talk about on my newsletter. No, I'm just kidding. But honestly, I think the three of us are in a good position where vendors are going to want to talk to us on a normal basis. But quite frankly, I'm not in the market most of the time, but I am like dealing with some sort of pain at work. And whenever I need a solution, I'm going to be going out to my network. So I'm going to be leaning on you, Daryl, or maybe you, Mike, or other folks that I'm in touch with. And quite frankly, that's how I'm, you know, trying to figure out what are the solutions that are out there. And I'm not always going to buy something. I might just try to go build it myself. And usually I'm, you know, trying to solve it first on Stack Overflow or going on YouTube or some sort of Google search, trying to figure out how to solve this damn thing. And then if I can't find anything self-serve, I'm going to start networking and asking people. And then it's from there, from those conversations, that I'm generally brought in and introduced to new technology. Now, I would say, you know, the last 3 years I've been on LinkedIn and writing a newsletter, I do get to sit on a different perch. I get to see different, you know, different solutions probably before anybody else does. But, you know, for most folks, I'd say to do it the old fashioned way, like I'm doing it. They're, you know, self-serving, trying to find a solution. They can't find anything. They start knocking on doors and finding out.
Yeah. I was just going to like, I echo that. You know, I get exposed to lots of tech nowadays, which is great for me, I guess. I'm certainly not in market most of the time, but I do like having exposure enough to maybe make a recommendation or what have you when somebody asks a question. But, you know, in general, I think one of the things that you touched on there, Jeff, that speaks to the persona of an ops person is the self-serve nature, right? So like, you're curious, you're going to go try to learn how to solve it yourself first. And I would argue that reaching out to your network is still self-serve. Like, you're still doing it yourself, even though you're asking for help, right? But you're doing the research, right, to be able to get to the answer that you're looking for. And I think that is a common, that curiosity trait, that like self, I'm going to go Google and try to find the answer myself. That if that's sort of your first motion, that you know, I think you're that I find that a lot with marketing ops professionals and RevOps professionals in general, right? Like they hit the knowledge base to figure out what might be the answer to their question. It's interesting.
Totally. All right. So I think the summary is we don't like to click on ads. We trust our network. And
we don't trust salespeople.
We don't trust salespeople. And subscribe to our newsletters.
Also do that.
All right. So next topic, I'll present this to you for feedback. I'd love to hear what you have to say. If you have any, if you think this is good or this is bad. I just recently finished our OKR exercise for my team. And so these are marketing ops OKRs. So for the listeners that don't know what OKRs are, it stands for objectives and key results. So I have the objective of becoming the most popular lemonade stand in the city. And my key results are I sell 300 cups of lemonade a day. So that's how you do objectives and key results. Now, what's interesting is companies have key results, but ops teams often don't. So what do? Right? We're usually just behind the scenes helping the company get to their OKRs. So I and many, a few other ops teams across my company set out to change that. You know, like we should have our team OKRs just for so that even though it's just for us, we want to know. So I'm going to share with you our three top objectives, and I'll share with you a couple of key results, and would love to hear how this hits you. If you feel like they can be improved, what you like about it, what you don't. So our first objective is improve our collaboration and support for key partners across marketing. So that's objective number one, improve our collaboration and support. Objective number two, drive productivity and efficiency of marketing campaigns and content through streamlined and optimized processes. So that's objective number two. And objective number three is enable marketers to effectively use data and tools to achieve their objectives. And I'll drop these into the show notes so you can see, so you don't have to memorize them. But for example, a key result would be if we're going to improve our collaboration, a key result would be setting up and executing our quarterly business reviews with our partners. To drive productivity, we want to, a key result could be decreasing SLAs by 15%. And by enabling marketers to, for the objective of enabling marketers to effectively use data and tools to achieve their objectives, one of the things that we could do would be to execute data-driven optimizations and improve campaign engagement, leading to growth in conversion rates, is what I wrote down. So I know that's a lot, and I'll drop them into the show notes.
I really like it. OKRs is, it's so funny, and like there's, I will be forever confused by OKRs because I often see a key result that, while it has a number in it, like it often can also be an objective. Like the way in which people think about key results and objectives are usually flip-flopped. You know, or like, for example, a company might say, our objective is to hit 1.4 million in revenue this year. Like, well, that feels like a key result. Like the objective could be, we want to grow revenue by 20%. The key result is we hit 1.4 million, right? Who knows, right? So anyway, just, I have issues with OKRs, but I love the intention of what they serve, right? Which is alignment, right? At the end of the day. So to get to your question though, improving collaboration and support for key partners, I really like this one. I think, you know, just sort of eyeballing some of the other key results that you've got in here. My head went into things like hey, do you have tools in place? How do you actually measure that, right? Like you, the support for your key partners, you know, whether that ends up being, there's lots of internal teams, for example, that in roles that I've been at where you do an internal NPS, like an ENPS, right? Employee NPS or what have you. And you get them to sort of give you a rating on different motions and how you work with them. Like you could totally implement that, right? And say like maintain an ENPS with our partners of an average of whatever, 8 or whatever your rating scale is. I think those are super interesting ways to measure it.
Interesting. Real quick on that one, I love the idea of NPS. We actually tried that and I thought I was really hoping to get a lot of insight and maybe some actionable data on what to do. It turned out, I also like it. We got a really high score.
Nice. So you're like,
so I was just like, huh. Dolls were great. Long story short, we decided to a much longer survey. That's more of like an internal customer satisfaction so that we can get some more actionable insight. So I do think for most people, an internal NPS might work well. For us, it didn't really tell us anything. It just told us we're great. And I knew that already.
But that's good. You got the validation, right? You got the market validation from your survey.
I'm all about dopamine hits. So I'm glad. It's like, hey guys, let's toot our own horns here and high five each other.
Yeah. Take it and run.
Exactly.
They maintain this, you know. Driving productivity and efficiency of marketing campaigns. You know, I really like this. I think it speaks to the marketing ops, you know, vocation very well, right? It's all about efficiency and effectiveness. You know, I think that fits kind of nicely. I like it when OKRs have a little bit of overlap too. When you look at some of the key results around maybe having like project management systems in place to measure your ability to drive efficiency and effectiveness, right? There's like a nice little Venn diagram happening where you're like, okay, well, we've got these collaboration tools we're looking to maybe put into play, try to measure our ability to have more collaboration with our partners and then, you know, increase that efficiency and effectiveness. And so, you know, I like that there's overlap there, honestly. I do wonder though, like if there's, you know, in the vein of partnerships, right? And an enablement function, teaming up with, you know, I think there's one in here you talked about conversion rates, and I don't remember which one it was right now, but you know, just really diving in with the team and saying, well, what's going, like, how can we create a framework or a system to help you better analyze a particular key metric on, you know, these different squeeze pages, right? To drive more signups or whatever. So,
yep.
Well,
yep.
You know, you've got the tools and the know-how and the possibility of leveraging that data flow. And I think that that's, you know, you're a good partner in that regard. And by creating these kinds of OKRs, it drives home, you know, a high ENPS. You're going to keep getting those high ratings.
Yep. Here's a question that I was challenged with. And one of the reasons why I started to implement this work, one of the other directors, I was getting feedback on my priorities because I try to share out my priorities to different leaders. And he looked at the list of priorities and he said, hey, this looks pretty good. It looks like you're going to be doing some excellent work. Can you tell me at the end of this year, how do you know if you did a good job or not? And I thought that was such a good question and a profound question. If you started working for a new CRO or whatever, and you set out your priorities and he asked you, or she asked you, like after six or 12 months, how do I know if you did a good job? Like what do you think you would say?
So I like to think about sports analogies. So imagine you are on a team, baseball or basketball, and your role is very specific. So let's say, for example, you play second base, or you play shortstop, or you're the center on the basketball team. Now you can maximize your effectiveness in your position, but in the context of the overall team result, I might say, well, I put in maximum effort. I did everything I could have, squeezed every ounce of potential this quarter, this year, and maybe the result turned out the way we wanted it to, and maybe it didn't. And so I think on an individual level, I give myself an A. But in terms of the team level, you know, those are postmortems that I'd have to have and say, well, you know, I think I accomplished my own goals, or I accomplished my team's goals. But in general, as an organization, maybe we fell short in a couple of areas. Why is that? What more could I have done in order to gain the result? So I think there's a, you know, you have to look at it at different levels. And then also, you know, Mike, you're talking about the confusion, the switch between key results and objectives. I totally think that happens all the time. Your key result should be measurable. You know, using the acronym SMART for your goals is an excellent way to think about it. And then your objective should be something that's lofty, an aspiration or an ambition. And then there's always the debate, and I have this in my revenue operations courses. And, you know, in the second lecture, we literally talk about, how do you set goals? Should you set goals where if you hit 100% of your target, you're considered successful? Or if you achieve 70% of your goals, you consider that successful? The two scenarios are quite different, because in the second scenario, you're setting these big, hairy, audacious goals. Some folks use the term BHAG. And what you want to do there is trying to stretch your team, right? So yes, you should be doing campaign operations as a marketing operations team. Yes, you should be doing forecasting as a sales operations team. But what else should you be creating as an organization that wasn't here before, that increases the surface area of the capabilities of your operations team, and therefore the effectiveness of the go-to-market team? And so when I think about, you know, how we set these goals up, you know, as a leader, you know, you want to have a different philosophy and set your philosophy first, and then put those goals in place that your team can, you know, in part figure out, am I successful at the individual, at the team, and at the company level?
I love that. I think that's a pretty profound answer too, because honestly, there's no easy answers to this. Like, just like in a sports team, you're right. Like, maybe the center does well on the basketball team, but the team still loses. So I ran a poll on LinkedIn, and it is, how do ops teams best work with difficult partner teams? And we have some difficult partners. They could even be marketers sometimes, but sometimes they're sales, sometimes they're product, sometimes they are, I don't know, sales operations or IT. The options are: 1, go to their boss. 2, think win-win. 3, do them favors. Or 4, other tactic. What would you vote and why? And what do you think is the best way to work with difficult partner teams? Because they are real.
They definitely are real. I think my natural inclination, just as a practitioner, has always been to just be helpful, right? And so I tend to try to skew the direction of, how can I best help you? I think I've talked to a lot of folks in our community that fall into that same vein of thinking, that the way that they think about things is just, how can I be helpful, which often services this role, the vocation of an operational role, to be underwater, you know, putting out fires constantly, saying yes to too many things, and potentially reaching burnout. And so the important thing is, like, even if you're headed in the direction of, you know, I think you're kind of tell, right? If I'm going to vote here, I would probably pick the think win-win option. The important thing is trying to figure out how to communicate that. I'm trying to help you, but it's like, help me help you, right? And that's, I'll be honest, you know, sometimes you can't get somebody else to hear the help me help you thing at all, and they're just going to continue to be difficult, and you just got to figure out, you know, how to keep making progress, but navigating that that very delicate conversation of, you know, hey, let's help each other, and understand that I'm in this for you as your partner is definitely the best possible outcome. I have tried the others, by the way. I have gone to bosses.
And sometimes you might need to, especially if you're dealing with a toxic person. But I like your approach of be helpful, because theoretically, if you're trying to help another team and everyone's moving in the same direction and has the same goals or OKRs, theoretically, you should be aligned. So yeah. I kind of like that. What's your vote, Jeff? And what do you think won?
The win-win's probably the most savory option. Doing favors, to me, doesn't scale. But you might do a favor in the beginning, like a win-win, like a quick win in order to build credibility and trust early on. But at the end of the day, you got to focus on the relationship, and you got to focus on the relationship in the context of the business. Sometimes I've worked with folks who are very good at getting what they want by standing on top of a soapbox and yelling as loud as they can. But, you know, that could be self-serving and could not be the top priority within the business. And so when you think of win-win, I think that means a lot of different things. It's about relationship building. It's about showing your roadmap. It's about co-building the roadmap. It's about identifying, you know, getting to the root cause of, you know, what is a win for that particular stakeholder. Like, as an operator, I have definitely been on the other end of being a punching bag for something that's going wrong in their department. And quite frankly, you're left holding the bag because you happen to be the person that's around. So, you know, when I think about, you know, how do you be the most helpful? I think Mike has a point there. When you are helpful and you come from that disposition, and then you combine it with some best practices around, you know, co-owning a roadmap or co-building a roadmap, you can get very far with, you know, with decreasing the tension with difficult partners.
I love that. One thing that I've done, and you're right, I think win-win is the winner, like by a mile. 81% of people voted think win-win. So when I work with difficult partner teams, and what we've been experiencing recently is they want us to do everything, right? So that to Mike's point leads to burnout. So what I do, and what I told my team to do, because this is a very delicate balance, what I do is I tell my team, listen, I want you to show up. I want you to show up, say, how is it going? What do you need help with? And be very firm. Like, no, we are not going to do everything for you. We are not going to check off your tasks in Asana. Like, we're not going to schedule meetings for you like an assistant, but we are going to continually show up and make sure you succeed. And I think that that's the balance. I think that it starts to go to burnout when you try to take the world on your shoulders and literally do everything for all of your partners. That doesn't scale. I always say that the way that we add value as an ops team is we use our expertise in data, in technology, in process design, in finance, it could be. We use those in project management. We use our expertise to help marketers and salespeople achieve their goals. That's what we do. And that does not mean we become personal assistants. That does not actually not add value. But our specific skill set can add a lot of value in a specific way. And it's just like a sports team. People play different roles. That's the role that I think we play.
I think it's a good call out. I think I agree with that. I think often we, marketing operations professional, you're servicing, let's call it three customers in a way, right? You, first and foremost, there's your actual customers, the people that buy your products and services, right? You are often thinking about their journey, the customer journey, the one that they go through to purchase and repurchase and renew and become advocates and all of that stuff. You're thinking about the entirety of that funnel. That's customer number one. And so when these requests come down the pike, depending on what they are, you're like, well, wait a minute, that would be maybe not a great idea because The customer might not like that. And you might have to go get data to back that up. So there's your customer, your first customer. Your second customer is potentially the business itself, being a good steward of the business and protecting the business. It's very frequent that a marketing operations professional is looking at CCPA, GDPR, legal documentation, and all that other stuff. And they're saying, hey, this is out of date. This isn't running properly. We're not getting the right stuff in place. And your customer at this point, you know, your job is to be a good steward to protect the business and make sure that it can continue to thrive. And so you have to think about any request that's coming your way to say, hey, is that good for our company? Does that reflect our business the way that it should be, you know, put into the market? And then the third customer is your internal stakeholders, and they all have their different priorities. Some of them are self-serving. Some of them are, I got a number to hit. And that can get in the way really quickly of customer number one and customer number two. And so I think what's important for, you know, leaders that if they tune into this podcast, or even, you know, leaders that are, I mean, like executives that are running these ships, whatever, these teams, or the team leads, right, is to try to find a way to have that autonomy and authority given to you to say, hey, I am a steward of this business. I am a steward of our customer journey, and I absolutely am a steward and partner and a business partner to each of these stakeholders that I can partner with internally as well. But all of them need to know that this is how we think about things, right? We're not just here, to your point, to deliver on the tasks that you asked us to deliver on and be your, I don't know what you used, your service provider, whatever, right? Like, we're not just succumbing to every beck and call, right, that you have for us, partner teams, and we have to think about the rest.
100%.
And I think that's really important.
Also, I think you touched on a key thing that, like, I've just been really thinking really deeply about, is that we are connected. We to our partner teams and stakeholder teams. Like, we cannot, I came up with this interesting thought. The ops teams really don't exist without our partners. We all work together. If there's no marketing to be done, there's no marketing ops. If there's no sales to be sold, there's no sales ops. There's no revenue ops. So I was just like, we do need to work together because we actually don't exist with each other.
I was just thinking of the word symbiotic. It's almost like we need the salespeople as much as they need us. I wonder where the leverage in the partnership lies. But Mike, man, great to have you on. You want to give a plug to Mopsapalooza, by the way?
Oh, sure. Why not? Thanks. Yeah, Mopsapalooza coming at you again, 2024, sunny California. So come hang out with the three of us here, because we're all here, coincidentally. Anaheim, right behind Disneyland, November 4, 5, 6. Yeah, in those date ranges right there, 4, 5, 6. And we'd love to have you. We're running live training, by the way, on Monday. So take advantage of that. Those tickets will be on sale soon.
Let's do it. Best marketing ops conference in the world. Please come. And I think that's a wrap. And thanks for coming and joining us, Mike. And I think that's it. Thanks, fellas. We'll see you next time on Revenue Rhythms.
Thanks, everybody.